The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today we're joined by Jan Ravensbergen. He's a journalist from Montreal. He worked for the Montreal Gazette. We're going to be learning a lot more about him today and his take on the 9/11 evidence and having worked in the mainstream media. Jan, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
A great pleasure to be here.
So tell us more about yourself and your career as a journalist.
Like most people, I thought Woodward and Bernstein were onto something pretty good, and so I worked on my high school paper, and then I founded my college paper, and then I went on to university and became the editor-in-chief there, and for some strange reason, I enjoyed journalism. So I went to Carleton for a little bit of specialized study at one of the universities here, and amazingly, I got hired by one of the mainstream papers here in town, the Montreal Gazette, and that was, oh my goodness, 1978.
Well, that is awesome. That's actually 1 year earlier than I was born, so most of my life you have been a journalist, and that is a long time. I'm beginning to feel it now, but a lot of great work you've done, and of course you are awakened to the 9/11 evidence. We'll be getting into that. Let's start off hearing your 9/11 story. Where were you on the day? How did you hear what was going down in New York?
I was actually sitting at the same table that I'm sitting at right now, and my wife said, turn on CNN. Something happened in New York, and I turned it on just in time to see the second plane hit, and I was, literally blown away. I mean, everybody was just, WTF, ?! And I was not working that day. I was very active in the union for many, many years, the newspaper guild, so I was on my way to the guild office, and I took a cab because I was focused on the first hour of the coverage, of course. And in the cab, the cabbie was listening to French language CBC, Radio-Canada, and I could not believe my ears. He said, you know, the announcer or whoever was the guy on the radio saying in French, the World Trade Center tower has collapsed. And I, you know, so we got to the office, and first thing I did is try and find a TV set. And sure enough, there was the tape. And tried to focus on, I had a couple of meetings lined up, and not all of them were canceled. And, literally, thank God I wasn't covering it, because I would have been un peu bouleversé, as they say, pretty blown away. I do recall the Gazette put out a special edition back in the day when newspapers had money, and a lot of papers put out special editions by 2 or 3 p.m. It was such a mind-blowing event.
That's right. Most of the, at least here in the United States, I think just about every newspaper put out a special edition. I mean, this was something none of us had ever seen before, and just felt like the whole world had shifted into something else right at that moment. And of course, most of us on that day didn't know exactly how we had shifted or the full nature of what we had just witnessed. Most of us bought the official story from the moment it happened, with the exception of some notable few. I'd like to know from you, when did you first wake up to the fact that we were being lied to about what brought these towers down?
Two specific events. I was walking home from the office one day, there were two guys at the Roddick Gates at McGill on Sherbrooke Street, and they were handing out DVDs. And one of them was Michael Penge, and the other one was... I guess I'm getting old, and I'll remember his name in a minute. And so they handed out the DVDs, and I remember one of them told me, oh, yeah, we were doing this in Ottawa, and it must have been 2005 or so, and we gave one to Joe Clark, former Canadian Prime Minister, and he was very interested as well. That was one element, and, of course, it was Richard Gage, and obviously the presentation. And the other one was my brother-in-law, Glenn Hodgins, gave me a copy of Barry Zwicker's book, Towers of Deception. And that blew my mind. Barry got it early. Barry got it very, very sharp. And so I started to wake up about 2005. So, I read that and I got a little more, how should we say, sensitized to the fact that we weren't being told the whole story. And, of course, as most print people, although we're becoming an extinct breed, my instinct was press the print button and just pull stuff off the web. And so I have boxes and boxes of this documentation. I was just going through it, and you know, everywhere you turned, there was stuff that was contradictory. There was stuff that make you say, hold on, are we getting the whole story? My personal favorite was Garrett Utley when he was reading the off the teleprompter, and he said, oh, we just have a report, police have found a passport with the name of one of the hijackers turned in New York. It fell from the airplane as it was crashing into the building, and Utley turned to the camera and said, if you can believe that. And he was toasted. His career went nowhere, and very soon thereafter he left the news business. Garrett Utley, courageous man, for speaking truth. A couple of, there was all sorts of stuff like that where you said something is really screwy. And then, of course, the 9/11 omission and the David Ray Griffin stuff. David Ray Griffin, oh, man, what a contribution, just from the get-go and all the books and all the analyses. So I got more and more of a sense of, the concrete arguments that the story we were told, or as we now say, the narrative, the official narrative, or as I like to call it on Twitter, the official fairy tale, was not just shot full of holes, but deceitful and a sham.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? The passport lands right there on the pavement so they can easily identify him. It sounds as wacky as a cartoon story, kind of hastily put together for a half hour of television. But that is the story that we are given. And, of course, when you get into the science of how these towers came down and how it doesn't jive with reality, the only thing that makes sense is controlled demolition. You know exactly what this was all about. So I want to know your perspective, because you were a reporter. You obviously have connections at your paper and likely other connections to chase down stories. What was it like being in the position that you were in and knowing about what you knew about after watching those DVDs and having all this information given to you?
Well, you got to wait for the right hook. So guess what? Hallelujah, Richard Gage is coming to town. This is in 2009. So he was, his standard presentation, I guess it's evolved over the years, but he came to a hall which would seat about probably 60 or 70 people in April of 2009. So I thought, okay, let's crank up the system a little bit. So I'm looking at it now. I can email it to you because it's hilarious. It was a setup email saying, hey, this is for the date file, Saturday, April 18th, 2009, from Ravensbergen to this Montreal City News, which was the assignment desk. Yo, decision makers, Montrealers are being offered a range of fresh evidence Saturday evening, April 18th, about the New York City 9/11 events in 2001, contradicting conclusions reported by the official investigation. American architect Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is addressing a group at 1212 Pan Am, room 100, starting at 7 p.m., and then, some descriptions about what age A&E is and all the rest of it. He points to the physics of the Twin Towers collapse. It's free-fall pace, the lateral ejection of steel, the mid-air pulverization of concrete as evidence that they could not have fallen exclusively because of the plane's impact. He will discuss scientific evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that contradicts the official story, including evidence of thermite and thermate. For some strange reason, they didn't send a reporter. How weird is that? But I also wrote a little piece that was actually published on the Gazette website, amazingly enough. Very, very low-key, you know. Richard Gage, an American architect who has been pushing for a fresh, independent, science-based investigation of the three 9/11 building collapses. I should have said destructions, but that was then. I was less enlightened. In New York City in September 2001, is scheduled to lay out his case for an audience in the city during a lecture Saturday evening. So a couple, I was there, of course, and a couple of people said, "Wow, how did that get on the Gazette website?" But of course, you know, that was basically, it went silent at that point, no coverage, and now the Gazette was not the only mainstream media to studiously ignore anything that diverges from the official fairy tale. But, during this quarantine business, I'm now a senior, I'm 65 years old, so I'm hanging around the house and I'm trying not to go outside too often except to the park with the doggy. And so I've been going through my boxes, so your timing is good. Later in 2009, John Boncourt, I don't know if that rings a bell, he's a Mohawk. He prefers the name Splitting the Sky. He was facing a criminal trial in Calgary for trying to arrest George W. Bush for war crimes. Came to Montreal on a speaking tour. So, you know, I wrote it up and it went as a little preview on the Gazette website. A public presentation hosted by a local advocacy group Saturday evening will focus on former U.S. President George W. Bush and former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney in connection with the events of September 11th, 2001. All of this stuff, you don't start off saying they're criminals and here's why. You have to be a little more elliptical. The main speaker will be John Boncourt, a longtime political and native rights activist. And David Ray Griffin, a theologian who is a leading 9/11 author, has provided Boncourt with an 18-page affidavit that Boncourt will attempt to have read before the Alberta court. Listen to this. Griffin has written extensively disputing what he terms, quote, the official conspiracy theory, unquote, around the destruction of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, as well as World Trade Center 7 in New York City, and related events that day. In late September, Griffin was named number 41 among, quote, the 50 people who matter today, unquote, by New Statesman, a British magazine. Anyway, that was posted on the web and went nowhere. But at least, you know, people who happen to go to the Gazette website could pick up on it. So, and I was pleasantly surprised that none of the bosses came along and pulled the plug on it. They were trying to humor us, I guess. And also it gives a sense that, mainstream media is giving fair coverage to the conspiracy theorists, you know, by having stuff actually show up on the web. Who knows? All I know is that I was happy to get that stuff out there, but it didn't make a poop load of difference in terms of moving the thing along, getting more people to recognize what was going on, basically bringing it to the point where people now can look at, for example, the coup d'etat against JFK, against Kennedy in 1963, you know, front, center. And at the end, it was planned, it was carried out, and then very successfully covered up by people whose names we suspect, but we don't know, and there's never been a criminal trial aside from Garrison. And I see a lot of parallels between the JFK murder and the coup d'etat and what happened on 9/11. In French, we have an expression, un coup monté. The English have a pretty good expression. They use it in connection with Assange, Julian Assange. It was a fit-up. You know, it was basically pre-planned and set up. And guess what? We're supposed to believe everything we're told and move along. So, I didn't get a lot of places.
Well, I'll tell you what, even friends of mine who aren't involved in the truth movement, who heard me talk about it but don't really get committed to it, they acknowledge that Kennedy was not as we were told, that they were likely killed by members of our own government. And I would just guess, this is not scientific, but that over 90% hold that belief in this country, yet the media still clings to it. They still protect the official story, and we still deal with this with September 11th, even when you have groundbreaking new research. You have a new report from University of Alaska Fairbanks that completely blows the NIST report right out of the water. I want to know from your perspective, since you have this experience, because as I said before on this show, I don't just say the mainstream media is censoring. I want to know what happens behind the scenes. It's impossible to do because I'm not a fly on the wall, but I'd want to know how those conversations go, what kind of back and forth happens, and how the system of control of information works. Let's hear it from your perspective. How can they keep something like this under lock and key? How does the management of this information go about?
Well, sometimes people try and nibble around the edges a little bit, and one of them was, do I have it here? Yes. One of my personal favorites was James Glantz, New York Times, in November of 2001, so November 29th, A Nation Challenged, the site. Engineers have a culprit in the strange collapse of 7 World Trade Center, diesel fuel. Okay, that was later, of course, totally dispelled, even by the NIST cover-up. But it's interesting, somebody inside the newsroom said, yes, it was a strange collapse, but what an elliptical way to approach it. And that's sort of characteristic of, if you're in the lamestream, if you're going after one of the sacred cows, and one of the sacred cows is, well, we all know what happened, and you're a conspiracy theorist if you disbelieve it, and if you disbelieve it, who knows what kind of a whack job you are, and you might be dangerous and all the rest of it. Talking 9/11 truth in a newsroom is like the third rail, your career ain't going to go anywhere but south. But people know that. Of course they know that. So anybody who has any kind of sense of, gee, maybe I can get ahead in this business, or maybe I can do some groundbreaking investigative work or get some better assignments, is going to know, without having to be told explicitly, if you have your personal doubts, that's fine. Just keep it out of the damn paper. Keep it off the airwaves, keep it off the web. And that will explain, why you do not get critical, as a rule anyway, you do not get critical stories about 9/11 truth or critical stories about the cover-up or all that stuff on the lamestream side, the mainstream press side. Alternative press is something else, thank goodness. But, to summarize it, it's the third rail, baby, and you're going to get toasted if you push too hard. Now, how did they get the message through to me? It was pretty hilarious. There are good managers in that business, and I had a couple of very good managers in my career. And one of them, he's passed on, unfortunately, Ross Teague. Wonderful guy, very sensitive. And at one point he was briefing somebody, and I was talking to him about something, and he said, oh, yawn, I suggested something, that some public official had done something untoward. He said, oh, yawn, we all know you're just a conspiracy theorist. Which is a nice way of flagging all my colleagues that I'm just a whack job. This was after I had done all of this, of course, and I had done more. And so I said, Ross, I want you to know I'm a conspiracy factualist. And I left it at that. But the subtext is very clear. And nobody who wants to get ahead in the business will rock that particular boat. The evidence, I guess, is that whenever you see some interesting stuff surfacing, it's either ignored studiously or bunch of slag jobs, right? And you'll see the waves of lamestream stories basically tusking about how deluded these people are who think that Mr. Bush must have pressed the button personally to blow up the towers. And by the way, you know, if you're suspicious of the BBC knowing beforehand and CNN knowing beforehand that WTC7 would collapse, well, you know, everybody makes a mistake. Foreknowledge. No. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about something else. So this is a kind of manipulation and control. And, you know, I studied sociology, but I'm no psychological expert. But if you tell somebody who wants to get on with life that they're basically stepping off the subway platform and going to electrocute themselves if they start talking about a particular topic, well, it's a fair conclusion that they'll act with some discretion in most cases. Long answer to a short question, bro.
No, it's exactly what I want to hear because, again, it gives insight into some of the conversations that's going on. And it really just cements what we know already. These guys, these people, journalists in the corporate media are absolutely silenced, and you do not touch this issue. Interesting that you note the BBC, which of course reported the collapse of World Trade Center 7 like something like 20 minutes before it actually happened. And then they come out later and say they lost all their 9/11 footage, which I don't really know how that even addresses the issue. It's almost like a kid just throwing out lies when you're caught doing something, and they just don't want to deal with this. So, I mean, even if you lost all your 9/11 footage, even if that were true, it's still captured on YouTube somewhere, and still haven't gotten a reasonable explanation for why that happened. And it's almost like if you really want to be a journalist now, you got to just forego any of the rewards that you see coming to you as a result of your good work, almost like a superhero or something. You got to just put aside any hopes of getting paid for it, do it in your spare time, and use that to tell the truth. And I see us winning. And I know it's hard to believe because of the continuing silence, but I see, at least here in the United States, the corporate media is becoming more and more irrelevant. The only time that I ever see people post corporate media videos on Facebook is those rare times that they're actually telling the truth about something. So you think they'd get the cue that maybe this is where the trend is going, you know? Maybe you can recapture your audience if you stop shilling for the government here. But that's the only time I ever see it.
But lamestream is also hollowed out at this point. You know, it's getting worse. I spent, God knows, almost 40 years doing this stuff. I love many of the people that I worked with, and some of them are still working, some of the younger ones. And they throw their heart and soul into it. You know, a journalist who loves their job will throw their heart and soul into a story. And in many cases, excellent copy, good local stuff, good coverage. You can tell I was a union rep for most of my career. But the point is that except when you touch some of the third rails or some of the hot spots, you know, you're not going to get a guy saying, "Okay, it's 50 years since JFK was murdered. Let's take a real look at the Dulles brothers and how they did it. Have you read the Talbot book?" No, you're not going to see that. Have you read the James Douglas book? And I'm more and more thinking that for years, looking at the 9/11 stuff, reading all this material, and there's all sorts of stuff. James Corbett has been awesome on some of the 9/11 stuff. P-Tech and Indira Singh and, the Harley guy very conveniently told us exactly what happened just after it happened. Perfect clip, you know, set it up. It's almost like a psychologist designed it to imprint our brains once we were blown away by the shock of the event. Oh, maybe that's what happened. Who would plan that? Must have been 19 guys with a couple of box cutters, some guy in a cave in Afghanistan. I'm sort of riffing here, but the point is that JFK, it was a coup d'etat, it was murder, it was triangulated fire in Dealey Plaza, and everybody knew it, okay, and it was covered up, and the American public was forced to swallow it. Mark Lane, Jim Garrison, a lot of people fought it, okay. Now, 60 years later, yes, there's a general acknowledgement. As you said, 90% of the American population, well, the 90% who read, yes. 9/11, you know, it's 20 years, man. Have we gotten to the point yet where the majority of the population will say, yeah, it was a snow job and we were lied to? I don't think we're there yet. And that's one of the symptoms of that, is that the lamestream has sort of lost its clout. And now I'm looking at what's happening around this COVID-19 thing and seeing some pretty good parallels. Not in the sense of this whole pandemic thing is a put-up job. You know, obviously, we're losing tens of thousands of people. It's unbelievable. But the response and the way we're being prodded to go in a certain direction. And if you'll permit me, I'm looking at, like, for instance, remember early up, the meme was, express your patriotism by becoming a couch potato. Just relax on your sofa and watch Netflix. Okay, you're quarantined. George Bush said, oh, express your patriotism, go out and shop. You know, the other memes, the first responders are the heroes. Absolutely, absolutely. You know, those fire department in New York guys, they were putting out the fire. They said, we got this little baby nailed, you know, 79th floor. We're good in a couple of minutes. You know, we brought up the hoses. That's when it collapsed. Yeah, that's when somebody... a couple of buttons, because the fire excuse would not have held after the fire was out. But the first responders are the heroes. Of course they are. And the first responders are the heroes in terms of what's happening now with this awful pandemic. You know, all the doctors, the nurses, the support staff, the people in the senior centers who are trying to cope with this thing, yes, they're the heroes. Guess what? They're also the cannon fodder. They're not supplied with enough PPE in this case. Well, look at the situation. The Environmental Protection Agency said, Ground Zero, yeah, perfectly safe. You know, there's nothing in the air that could cause any problems. Well, we know that that was a lie. So the first responders are the heroes, and they're the sacrificial lambs. How screwed up is that?
Well, the whole situation is screwed up. I feel like I'm in some kind of Kurt Vonnegut novel these days, considering that the whole event is just based on an outright lie that this was set up to happen. There were explosives in these buildings, and you have to jump through 900 hoops just to get any member of government or media to pay attention to. And you talked about expressing patriotism by either staying home or going out shopping, depending on the event. To me, I express patriotism by doing nothing different than I did before whatever event happened. That's the best way I express my patriotism. Jan, this half hour has just gone by in a flash for me, and you're very interesting. I'm going to need to have you back at some point, but for today, again, they only give me a half an hour, so thank you so much for your great work and writing about Richard coming to Montreal those years ago and speaking out when so many people don't. And thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Freefall today.
Great pleasure, and rock on, baby, and we'll do it again when you want. I do want to say anthrax is, to me, the key. You know, you interviewed Graham, and man, he just so nailed it. You know, talk about nailing it. Anthrax just put the lie to the whole fairy tale. And I just remembered the name of the other guy at McGill, Ken Fernandez. Who could forget Ken Fernandez? He's quite the character about town. So I thank Barry Zwicker. I thank Ken Fernandez. I thank Michael Pengy. I thank lots of others, you know, not just Dr. Griffin, but there's all sorts of people who have laid it out on the line, and makes for an easy path to follow because it's so logical.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Say have a great week. Good luck.